Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 21, Blind Date. And Leia, when I was watching this episode, I realized we only have one more episode and we're done with Season 1.
I know.
When did that happen?
It took a long time.
You're like, what do you mean, when did that happen? We've been here for a long time.
I mean, we've been doing this for like a year now.
That's true, I think, huh?
Right? It'll be a year in like June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we started recording, I think, a little bit before that. Like our first episode dropped in May. So yeah.
Yeah. My God.
So we have a little something that we've been talking about for a while. We've really, really been wanting to do this in Season 1, but with me moving and just with trying to adjust to doing two podcasts, we weren't quite able to do it. But starting in Season 2, Investigating Angel is going to go to every week. So we're going to be covering – I know. I'm so excited. We've been wanting to do this forever. I think it's going to be so fun to talk about it on a weekly basis. It'll just help with everything being fresh. You guys will get an episode a week. We'll get to talk every week. It's going to be so much fun. So starting in Season 2, whenever that is.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be so much like, I don't know, I guess it'll just be nicer for like the rewatch too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching an episode every 2 weeks is like, you kind of like lose focus a little bit. But now with the weekly, we'll just like, it'll be like we're watching it on TV again.
Yeah. No, but it'll help with like sometimes I'm like, okay, where are we? What's happening in the season and stuff? And so I think it'll be helpful to do it on a weekly basis. And yeah,
everything will still be fresh. And also we'll get through like everything so much quicker, which is, I mean, not that I want to get through it. Like I'm just saying it's fun because like there's so many exciting things coming up. So I just like want to get to those exciting things, you know, and I want to get there sooner rather than later, you know?
Yeah. I'm excited. Season 2 especially is just phenomenal. So it's going to be so fun to do that at a faster pace.
Yeah. Like what a great season to start like watching more frequently and dropping. Season 2 is just like incredible. So
yeah,
very exciting times ahead, guys.
All right, so Blind Date, written by Janine Renshaw, who is actually known for writing the movie Hook starring Robin Williams. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, Leia.
I haven't, but I've heard of it.
That is one you definitely should see. Robin Williams is great.
Wait, is it the Peter Pan movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I have seen that actually.
Okay. Yes. Something you've seen.
I've seen it. Yes.
Okay. But that is a fantastic movie. She actually also had a small role in that. She was the drama teacher or the acting teacher, the one that was like feeding the lines to Robin Williams' daughter when she was playing as Wendy on stage. So, kind of fun. She also was a producer on Grey's Anatomy and Charmed. And we have seen her on this show before, or at least seen her writing, because she wrote I Will Remember You and Parting Gifts.
Oh, wow.
And this episode holds up. This is a fantastic episode.
This is an important episode.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. This is one of those episodes that I'm like, I really wish we had spoilers because I kept just coming up with so many things that will like this episode is just pivotal.
It really is.
We will be referencing it all the way up into
the very end. Yeah. This is an episode you have to remember this episode until the very end because it's important. And I feel like it's an episode that like on past rewatches, I don't really remember that well for some reason. All I remember is that there's Lindsay in it. It's like the first Lindsay-centric episode. And then that's it. And then the scroll, which obviously like that's huge. But I don't know, just watching it this time, I was like, hold on. I'm picking up on so many things right now that I hadn't realized before. And yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah. I agree. It's also an episode that I don't feel like that many people talk about. Like when people are referencing season one, we talk about Tishan Shu, which is the next episode. And then we talk about the previous one that introduces Gun. We don't talk about this one very much. And I'm so curious as to why, because this episode is just fascinating. It's so subversive with Lindsay. And Lindsay is an extremely interesting character to me.
Me too.
It's directed by Thomas J. Wright, aired May 16th, 2000. So you can really tell this episode is – well, it's the first of several Angel episodes that feel like a comic book in a way and introduce a character that feels like a comic book, either superhero or supervillain, and that really leans into the Angel as a superhero trope, I guess you could say, or I guess would it be a theme in the, of the show, at least at this point. You can really tell that Joss is a Marvel and DC fan.
Yeah.
Producer Tim Minear explains that this episode provides a detailed exploration of Wolfram and Hart, establishing the power base there and laying the groundwork for season two. It also provides backstory for the character of Lindsay, including his motivations for working at Wolfram and Hart. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that this is laying groundwork for season two, because I think it's pretty clear with how this episode ends that we're going to be seeing more of Lindsay in his new role, Wolfram and Hart, leading into the next season. So like Leia, you said earlier, this is the first Lindsay-centric episode. And oh boy, I think he has got to be one of the most interesting characters that they have introduced so far. And it's really interesting because I was thinking about the main cast and it's just David Boreanaz, Alexis Denisoff, and Charisma Carpenter. But they have so many reoccurring characters that it feels like the show is testing out to see if they want to make into main cast members. Yeah. And I definitely hope – and I think the show is going to have Lindsay come on more just simply because the chemistry between him and David Boreanaz is
so good.
Is electric.
So good. You can tell that they're pals in real life.
Yeah, okay. David Boreanaz, and we'll talk about this. I felt like Angel was different this episode. There was a difference to the way that he carried himself, and like there's definitely a reason for that. And again, wish we had spoilers, but it was really interesting to watch, and I think a lot of that is because of Christian Kane. I think David likes acting with him.
He was just having fun on set that day.
Right. So Lindsay is a fantastic – not only is he a great character all on his own, but he's a really, really – interesting mirror to Angel, and I never caught that until I watched this last time. And the twist of him going further into evil versus going to the good side is such a cool, subversive, just way to end this episode. I remember the first time I watched it, my jaw was on the floor because that was not at all what I was expecting to happen. And I was hooked from there on. I was like, I want to see what happens with this character.
Yeah, because Lindsay's the type of character where you kind of like, you're like, oh my god, he's making the worst decisions ever, but then you kind of root for him at the same time because he shows you these like little pockets of like really vulnerable like humanity. And you're like, oh, but maybe there's a chance for this guy. Maybe he'll like change, but then he'll like, again, make a bad decision. And you're like, god damn it, Lindsay. But it's also like so interesting because that's what, you know, that's what keeps you interested in a character, right?
Yeah. Well, you also get the sense that he's not like pure evil, at least at this point. And as much as I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of situational ethics at its extreme, having a horrible childhood doesn't excuse you from being evil and making evil choices, but he's understandable. At what point, I think Passion the Nerd talks about this, at what point do you go, okay, I've been dealt a really crappy hand. So how much of it is my own fault? How much of it is my choice? And even when it actually comes down to me choosing to live the crappy lifestyle that I've had before or trying to further myself, like then there comes the like the sticky situational ethics.
At what cost?
Yeah, at what cost? And because technically everything that we do, somebody is like we're benefiting off the back of somebody else. Like that's kind of how capitalism works. That's kind of how our world just in general works. Like I think about our cell phones. We need cell phones to function in this life, but also like labor and stuff like that. Like it's not always ethically sourced. And so it just makes it – it's just very tricky. And obviously that's a lot more of a –
that's like, basically what extreme. Holland Manners was saying.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Holland Manor is that man. That man is insightful in the most evil way possible.
Yes, as only Angel and Buffy villains can be, right?
Honestly, right? He's like Mayor 2.0, but like even scarier because I love like Richard, Jenkins. Is that his name? No, that's Anya's last name. Wilkins.
Richard Wilkins, yeah.
Richard Jenkins.
Anya's stepdaddy.
Stepdaddy, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, no, but it's true. And so I think, like, especially when you have a character that's so sympathetic, and we all can relate with that feeling of feeling powerless or being scared and feeling tired of not having that security. So they just did a really great job of giving Lindsay a very, very fleshed out backstory that's relatable. There are a ton of fatherhood themes, again, with Holland and Angel. I know. I'm just stating the obvious here at this point. But Holland and Angel kind of on two different sides here, and both Lindsay and Angel are told they're a part of something bigger. Like, I'm just really curious to see where they're going to go with Lindsay and Angel mirroring each other. Christian Kane says this. He says, David's got the cool rule. Let's be honest. It's his show and he's a badass, but he doesn't get to have the range that Lindsay does because Lindsay's human and he's got all this stuff. He does get to play it, but he can't really show a weak side. But I can do that all in one episode, and that's what's so fun about my character that I get to play. There's so much stuff that happens to Lindsay when he's by himself, so he gets to play that without even saying any words. It's the writing. I think my character's popular because of Tim Minear's writing, which I think character's popular because he's hot, but Tim Minear is
charismatic.
Definitely helps. Yeah. Christian Kane is electric on screen. I think a lot of it has to do with the episode Blind Date last year because he joined the good side, so you're always rooting for him. And then a lot of people still want him bad, so it's kind of cool. What I like about this episode was that he's on the good side now, but he's still bad. Me too, Christian. And then Sheik Gennarelli is the costume designer. They wrote, Lindsay, I love to dress. He's the guy. He is the total player of the show. So I have suits made for him from Italy. Man.
Oh.
I know.
Whoa. They're a little bit big on him. I feel like that was kind of the style.
That was the style.
At the time. But when you look at it now, you're like, oh, man, they need to, like, take that in a little bit. He's not a large man. So he looks like he's swimming in these suits. But, I mean, he still looks good. He's got that hair, like the flow. It's very nice, you know, and those cheekbones. Like, he looks good, eyes. You know?
Yeah.
Those eyes. Oh, the eyes.
Yeah.
There was a few close-up shots of his, like, face, and I was like, oh, my God, Lindsay, don't look at me anymore.
Leia, you're cheating on Angel over there.
Never. Never, ever, ever.
No, but I agree. It's so funny. That totally was the style in 2000s, was the very like grunge look where things were a little bit baggier on the guys and then skin tight for the girls. But I just think about, oh, man, imagine Christian Kane in a fitted suit today. I just – oh, it's so good. All right, so Sheik Gennarelli, I'm probably butchering that, but they say, I have this company in Beverly Hills called Rigotti, and they make me the most beautiful handmade Italian suits that I get for $700. Oh, my God.
That's actually not bad.
I know. They're like, I'm an amazing price, but I'm over here like, oh, my gosh. I guess that's not bad for a full suit.
That is an amazing price for a suit.
I guess so.
That's a great price for a suit.
I've never bought one, so that feels like a lot of money to me, but I guess that would make sense if you're importing them from Italy.
But you also have to think about it. Men can rewear the same suit over and over and over again because you can change the tie. You can do all that. But like for like a woman or somebody who wears a dress or like formal wear, you can't, I don't know, like you could wear it again, but it's more obvious if you do. So you're getting your money's worth out of that $700.
That's true. Yeah, to be honest, I haven't really paid attention whether he's been wearing the same suit or not. They probably have like two or three on rotation. And they say stature-wise, he's not really tall and he's got a great body. He wants to show it off even in the suits. So my cutter slash fitter, Wendy, who is fabulous, recuts all of his shirts, even though you don't see them under the suit, unless he takes his jacket off and makes them fit him perfect. That's what our job is. I like a complete look. Don't just put a suit on. I want that suit to look phenomenal on you. So hopefully we'll see more jackets off of Christian Kane in the future. there's an essay entitled Why We Love Lindsay. MS West says that the scene at the end of the episode fulfills Joss Whedon's earlier promise of a more adult show with less clear fault lines of right and wrong. Lindsay makes a difficult choice between redemption and power, ultimately choosing to accept the promotion. In that moment, West writes, Lindsay is what Angel the show struggled through its first season to be. And I just this episode is – it feels like every episode we're getting more of a crisper idea of what the show wants to become, and it's becoming more cohesive and the themes are all coming together and we're starting to get kind of the broader overarching theme coming into play. We're also getting more of Wolfram and Hart. We're starting to see the characters really kind of gelling and settling in and where their place is on the show. And it's just so fun when you reach this point of the series, especially like for us who have like had to battle through a lot of really not great episodes this past season. But it's just such a pleasure to watch it all kind of clicking into place.
Agreed.
This episode also really brings forward the concept of fate, whereas the Buffyverse has always kind of landed heavily on the side of choice. And so that's, again, that waffling of like, okay, how much are we in control of our destiny? How much is our destiny dictating where we go and it's out of our hands? And so that's going to be a big player moving forward in the rest of the series. And then always, I think we should make a segment, but the parallels to Buffy, interesting, you know, you have the end of Prophecy Girl where she finds out that it's prophesied that she's going to die when she goes to the Master. But then she ends up going and thinking that's her choice and then finding out that if she hadn't have gone, the Master wouldn't have risen. And so again, it's playing with that whole idea of fate versus choice. And I think we're going to get a little bit of that with Angel and this mysterious scroll that we do not know the name of yet.
Like, wait.
All right, so jumping into the episode, the script says a G.I. Joe type army doll stares into camera, gun pointing right at us.
Riley?
We have a bunch of vendors.
Yeah,
like, no, which episode or which series are we on?
He followed us from the Yoko Factor.
Although, okay, I will say I had a little bit of flashbacks with Christian Kane's hairstyle. It looked kind of like Riley's at the beginning of season four with like the, what do you call those, money pieces?
The middle part and the money. What, didn't Christian Kane audition for the role of Riley?
Yes, he did. And Joss liked him so much that he created the role of Lindsay.
He would have been too charismatic to play Riley. And like,
dude, but could you imagine? I mean, I would have actually maybe liked Where the Wild Things Are.
I don't know about all that, but
but I mean, the Christian Kane and Sarah Michelle Gellar, I think, would have had a lot of electricity, and I might have actually shipped Riley with Buffy.
Okay, but I feel like they would have had to have some type of antagonistic relationship for it to be like electric like that, because I feel like that's what Christian Kane is really good at. He's good at being like, I don't know, like that slick guy that like gets under your skin, but not in like a Spike type way, because Spike just gets under your skin because he's like so annoying. But like, but like Christian Kane, like Lindsay is like, he's like smooth, but also like you got to like watch out for him. Yeah. He's not he's not a Riley type. Like it wouldn't have been the same thing as like Buffy and Riley, you know?
They definitely made the right choice with where they're going with Riley and all that stuff. I think that they would have had to write Riley very differently. Christian Kane's definitely not what they were looking for, but also it does feel like they don't really know what they're doing with Riley over there. And they did kind of like write things based upon how Mark Lucas's acting was. So I wonder if they would have changed Riley's eventual outcome if Christian Kane had been more popular and more charismatic. So I don't know. Anyway,
things to think about.
We just broke two of our rules. We talked about Riley and Spike on the podcast.
Sorry,
so shame
I'm
on
so
us.
Sorry. Never again.
Anyway, okay. All right. So we see a bunch of vendors and a blind woman walks by. This guy's watching her, and the blind woman, we find out her name is Vanessa Brewer. So interestingly, the actress who plays Vanessa, her name is Jennifer Badger. She played or has played Charisma Carpenter and Eliza Dushku's stunt double for both Buffy and Angel. She was also one of the victims in Somnambulist in like one of the flashbacks in the pictures. She was either Penn's or Angel's victim. I don't remember who. The actress has served as a stunt double for Megan Fox, Miley Cyrus, Angelina Jolie, Drew Barrymore, Danielle Panabaker, Diane Lane, Lake Bell, Sophia Bush, Courtney Cox, Rose McGowan, Alexis Bledel. Like, and she's done stunts for tons of Marvel movies such as Endgame, Wakanda Forever, and the Caribbean. So
what
she
a badass.
An amazing,
so all of those fight sequences are actually her.
That's actually her. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know. They were like, well, we're just going to cast you. And she did a great job, like not only acting wise, but then the fact that she did all the physicality too. I think that would probably make sense why the first scene, we'll get there, that first fight sequence felt odd to me because they kept having to do these amazing wide shots and then they would close on David Boreanaz, and it's because he couldn't do the choreography for that.
Right.
And it created more of a choppy effect. Yeah. Did you notice that too?
Yeah.
Yeah. There, it was kind of hard to follow at times because of the way they cut back and forth. But yeah. She's also a 4-time nominee for the World Stunt Award, Best Overall Stunt by a Woman, Best Car Action Sequence, Best Fire Stunt, and Best Specialty Stunt. And she was winner of the 2012 Action Icon Award. So she is very
cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm clapping.
I like that we get to see her face on screen and they gave her her own role. It makes it kind of special.
Yeah.
All right. So then we jump to this super intense, very well choreographed fight scene with David Boreanaz and or I guess I should say Angel fighting a vampire. Apparently, this was supposed to be something different. Originally, like the script says that there was supposed to be sparks. So he was supposed to electrocute the vampire. The script says, note to production, if the vampire, or if they call it vampacue, which is kind of cute. If the vampacue is too expensive or a massive pain in the ass, please have Spyro create a badass Angel versus the two vamps fight. So obviously that didn't happen. They ended up doing something different by having him being staked through like the machinery. All right. So Angel sees a man, a human come out and he has been killed. And then he gets attacked by Vanessa. Really cool scene. Again, we see her glasses fall off and we see, oh, she actually is blind because we're thinking, okay, is she just faking it? No, she went all Matt Murdock on him. Daredevil.
I got that reference.
Marvel references. I understood that reference.
I understood that one.
Yeah. Thank you. Wow, we're just jiving today, Leia. This is great.
It's just luck.
Well, look what happens when we actually have great source material to talk about, you know?
For sure.
You're like, yes, that's what that is.
Yes.
They show a shot of Vanessa. Like, she has like this weird vision, again, very Daredevil-esque, where it's not like regular, seeing like a regular person. It's more like watching through like an x-ray machine, or how would you say that? Like it was swirls of color and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very weird. I don't quite understand it completely.
I think the idea, just based on the last fight sequence, is that she can see people's movements, and maybe it has to do with like literally movement. Like if you're moving very quickly, like she can see the shadows of that. I don't know. Yeah. That's what I kind of figured from like the last scene. Cause when David Boreanaz, when Angel's standing like really still, it's like a statue. I was like, oh, okay. I guess she can't see him anymore.
He caught on to that really fast. I was a little confused because the kids were just kind of sitting there and they weren't moving. So I was curious how she saw them. But then like in one of the flashbacks, they showed their hearts pumping. So I think the fact that he's dead and his whole body's completely still. Yeah. So that would make more sense. The script says what we see is a Curlian photography video, like brilliant fluorescent colored outlines with people more bright and vivid than objects. Angel's movement sends a tail of light like a comet, but the movement's force is revealed before it actually happens. The punch can be seen before it is thrown. So not only does she like see the movement, but she can kind of like see the impact that the movement will have. And so she can alter how much force to put into a punch or a block, I think is
so
what they're trying to say.
She is a superhero.
She is. Well, super villain, but yes.
Super villain, yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Vanessa Murdoch over here. This is really cool. Special effects supervisor Lonnie Peristeer says they couldn't afford to shoot Vanessa's perspective using green screen. So instead they came up with the crazy idea of painting the actors with glow-in-the-dark paint and shooting the scenes in the dark. The effect was intensified by offsetting the footage to create tracers and then reversing the image. It was supposed to tell the story that she sees the action before it actually happens, explains Peristeer. It was such a wacky idea and it really worked out well. So those clips, the actors are painted. Isn't that cool?
So interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't quite understand what offsetting the footage and all that other stuff is. So if anybody works in film and knows what that all is, like, let me know. Because I'm a very visual learner too. So it'd be so cool. I wish there was some behind the scenes footage or something of them shooting those scenes. But I thought that was really cool.
Very cool. Everybody's so creative. Like that lady Leia's on TikTok. Bombastic side eye.
Bombastic
criminal side offensive eye. Side eye.
You are in a mood tonight.
I'm sorry.
You're fine. I love it. It's all good.
Bombastic side eye.
Bombastic oh side eye.
How dare criminal you make fun offensive of offensive attempt
side
to
eye.
Make it a smooth transition back to the episode. There's no coming back from that.
Okay, sorry. I give you the floor.
You know who can't give a bombastic side eye is Vanessa.
True, because wow. Too soon.
That's better than Cordelia's Helen Keller joke.
Oh, no.
Yeah, bet you forgot about that one, didn't you?
I did just conveniently black out when that happened. So
the one scene Cordelia was in.
No.
I'm gonna have to cut so much of this out.
Okay, go
all
ahead.
Right, we are composed. All right, so Angel gets his butt whooped by Vanessa, and then when he comes back out of the doorway, he finds that she is gone. So then we cut back to his office, and Wesley's trying to look up what kind of demon he thinks that Vanessa is, and he's frustrated because he's obviously not finding the right demon, because she's not. She's a human. So then Wesley kind of puts two and two together, and it was like, well, maybe she's just learned to hone her senses around her disabilities. Wesley is like super uber smart in this episode. He's barely in it, but then he keeps putting two and two together for like a lot of different things. And you're just like, this is very efficient of you, Wesley. Well done. You've been practicing. So then Cordelia and Wesley also are working super great. Just the dream team over here. Cordelia is like, hey, if she's actually a human, that means she's probably got a record and has done this before. So then she, before Wesley can even finish his thought, has pulled up a description and has found out that it's Vanessa Brewer. But not just that, she has a criminal record and she's being represented by Wolfram and Hart. Dun, dun, dun. Oh boy, look at that.
Wow.
Whoa.
Whoa.
So we find out that she's currently on trial for as a suspect in a double homicide. There's a part in the script that is cut out where both Cordelia and Wesley don't want to tell Angel that it's Wolfram and Hart again. So you kind of, I think, reading into that along with everything else that's going on with this episode, we get the sense that Angel's feeling really discouraged and he's frustrated because he doesn't feel like he can do anything to beat Wolfram and Hart. But we have this really cool scene in the courtroom where we have Lindsay once again representing Vanessa, and Angel just like strides through. I wrote in my notes, I was like, here comes Angel again to mess up Lindsay's day. Honestly, that's my favorite part of the show right now.
That is Angel's other job, is to mess up Lindsay's day. First is being obviously the Dark Avenger, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, you know, helping the helpless. But then his side hustle is to
his day job, you know,
his side hustle is to royally fuck up Lindsay's life at any chance that he can take.
And he's like, so good at it. Lindsay's pissed off face is just really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, he's big mad.
But this is just so sweet. He just like runs – and sweet not in like a cute way, but like sweet isn't like this is cool. He just like runs in, well, strides in, bursts open the door and throws her glasses. And she just coolly grabs them without even turning around, which completely demolishes Lindsay's case that she's innocent and that she's disabled, which, ah, it's so, so cool.
But she still gets off.
She does. And it's interesting because she – the script says a barely perceptible smile. And we see that in the episode. It's – she's like pleased about this. Kind of like, I'm untouchable. You can't do anything to hurt me. Then we were back in Wolfram and Hart. And I forgot this episode was mostly from Lindsay's point of view. And honestly, it was really, really cool to kind of see the inner workings of Wolfram and Hart a little bit more closely.
Yes.
From the perspective of someone who's doing something that they don't approve of, like they really built the suspense of this episode very, very well. So we meet Holland Manners for the first time. He is an excellent bad guy. He is really fun to watch. He is with Vanessa. And then we have slimy little Weasel Mercer over here. I'm kind of like glad this guy got killed in this episode. I'm not going to lie. He's slimy.
He is. He's very slimy.
Yeah. But he like gets all up close to Lindsay and is like whispering in his ear, like right there, and is all like, I can't believe you got her off on all charges. And like this hushed whisper. Ooh. I was like, okay, what are you doing here? Like personal space, man. The script says we see Lindsay is a little startled by Mercer's arrival. His mental state is a little distracted. He's beginning to question his role here at Evil and Evil Incorporated. The director of this episode really, really liked their low angle shots. They did this all the constantly, like shooting at an angle, shooting from below. And it was interesting because they did that for Lindsay to kind of create this sense of like foreboding, like he's kind of unsettled and questioning things. But they also do it for Gunn. In when he walks in and you get a very different feel. It's almost like Gunn is larger than life. And I thought that was so cool how the same shot, it conveys two completely different meanings depending on the scene. So it was just very interesting. So Mercer talks about how hot Vanessa is. And I wrote, ew, where's Faith when you need her?
Yeah, I'm surprised his face got fixed again after she beat it up.
Yeah, Wolfram and Hart has some great doctors, probably.
Yeah, some witches that fixed his face.
Some witches that fixed his face?
Like, I don't know.
They come in, they're just like, mmm.
I'm imagining like Hermione like coming up to him and be like, what does she say? Oculus Repairus.
Yeah, whatever
but
she
says. But it's not his glasses, but like for his face.
Yeah, his hairline did look a little better, so maybe some sort of witchcraft was happening in this episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mercer, you talk big game for a guy who has a receding hairline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and doesn't understand personal boundaries in space here. Little Lindsay looks bitch. A little skeeved out, I know.
Lindsay's like, get away from me. Like,
get away from me. Okay.
Yeah.
We are like all over the map today. Okay. So then Holland motions over Lindsay, introduces him like officially to Vanessa. You can tell he's creeped out by her. And so then Holland pulls him into the room. And it's interesting because there's three different times in this episode where someone asks Lindsay, either are you afraid or are you unnerved? And you could tell they're hammering home the idea that Lindsay is fearful. Lindsay feels like he doesn't have control. And because of that, it leads him to do evil things because he desires power. And Holland talks about that in this next scene. And they use this woman as like the first example in this next scene. So then they have this kind of like father-son chat where Holland says, you know, I can kind of tell that you're floundering. You've not had a great year. But this is kind of an important time of year. This is the time where we separate the winners from the dead weight. And basically subtly manipulating him, but also kind of threatening him at the same time. Like, the writers do such a good job on this show of like conveying these nuanced ideas and these veiled threats in a way that is very subtle, but is also like Holland is kind of charming too. Like he's also manipulative. And so but also like there's a little bit of truth behind what he's saying too.
the thing about Holland Manners, especially in this episode and, you know, just in general, is that it's almost like he's making Lindsay think that he has a choice in the matter with the way that he's speaking to him. Almost like he's just guiding him and telling him, you know, here's some advice about how you can, you know, become better and get the things that you want out of life. But there's an undertone of like, you don't have a choice. This is what you're going to do. And I am telling you what you're going to do right now. And it's just, it's so interesting because like you said, it comes off as very like fatherly and like, I'm just, you know, giving you some guidance and like, I really do care about you and your future, but really it's all about power. Like the whole theme of this is like, who has the power, who has the most power is going to be the most, you know, the person that's going to come out on top. But it's just, yeah, it's very interesting watching Holland Manners do that. It's very similar to like the mayor, right? Season 3 Buffy. But this is a lot more sinister because this giant law firm come like it seems like it's a lot bigger than like what the mayor was than small town Sunnydale, right? Which is kind of scary knowing how much these lawyers, how much power these lawyers have.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's just there's a lot of layers to each of the conversations that Holland has with Lindsay in this episode. He talks about, you know, I did a lot of crazy things when I was your age, you know, searching and all. It took me a while to realize how the world is put together and where I belonged in it. Actually, the world isn't that complicated. It's designed for those who know how to use it. This very black and white way of looking at things is what Angel expresses missing in the next scene. And it's what Lindsay is wrestling with. He's realizing the world is not that simple, but if he wants it to be, then he kind of has to manipulate. It requires using other people and it requires compromising and basically completely getting rid of your conscience and any sort of conviction that you have, what makes this so compelling is that Angel in the next scene expresses how hard it is to live in a way that is consistent with your convictions and in a way that fights back against the selfish people who want power and are willing to lord over other people to get it. So it's so fascinating to watch Angel himself wrestle with this, and Lindsay is kind of like his polar opposite. This is such a good episode. It's also really interesting too, because then Holland jumps into talking about Vanessa. He says, I don't think she had a happy childhood. He says, our blind friend Vanessa, I think she was terribly abused growing up. I think the details are tragic and shockingly specific, and I think you should create them sooner rather than later. This is so interesting, and I didn't catch this until, again, this watch, because this is the excuse that Lindsay gives Angel a few scenes later as to why he has resorted to Wolfram and Hart, even though he knows they're evil. He says he had a horrible childhood. And I thought that was so clever. The writers are already hinting at where Lindsay's going to fall by the end of this episode. And I think Holland, the fact that Lindsay goes in and tries to convince Angel to help him out. And he says, well, I had this horrible childhood and all this other stuff like that. And then he talks about Angel's father and says, basically, you came from a place of privilege. You can't possibly know what it was like. Holland knows Lindsay's background. And so Holland's manipulating Lindsay just like Lindsay was trying to manipulate Angel. Angel doesn't let him though. And and like kind of what you were saying before, Lindsay doesn't realize he's being manipulated this entire time.
Lindsay thinks that he has, you know, he has a real choice here, but really he never did.
And it shows that Lindsay never truly was doing this for the right reasons, that Angel's actually right in the next scene, because he's trying to justify the bad thing he's doing. And in some way, he is no better than Vanessa Brewer, who they're trying to make into having this traumatic childhood and all that stuff. It's just – it's so cool. The layers to this episode is just fascinating. All right. So Holland leaves Lindsay with this idea that, like, Vanessa is going to be killing these children. You shouldn't know anything more than that. I'm sure he'll get right onto that. And he leaves, and we watch Lindsay just, like, suddenly realizing, oh, my gosh – do I want to take this next step? This is kind of like the next step in searing my conscience. How far have I gone? What's going to happen? Everything's kind of like spiraling on him. And one can't help but feel like Holland maybe set him up because he's trying to push Lindsay to see how far he's going to go. And maybe Holland knew that Lindsay would balk at this, but that if he could tempt him with more power, he would actually have Lindsay fully, because now Lindsay's willing to do whatever it takes to get his hands dirty. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Holland
set
this up for that.
It's almost like he's doing everything he can to make sure that like the last of like Lindsay's conscience is kind of, you know, sold to Wolfram and Hart. Like, we have your entire soul now.
Yeah. Right. And now we have all of this dirt on you. So if you ever try to leave, that's why Holland isn't worried at the very end when Lindsay comes in and says, oh, I have a few things to protect myself. Holland's like, well, I'm sure you'll do worse things moving forward. Yeah.
Do you really?
You've played exactly into my hand. Jumping to Angel's tantrum, not really tantrum. I feel like this is very justifiable, honestly. They acquitted Vanessa, and he's frustrated because he's like, how am I supposed to fight evil when they won't even put her behind bars? Wesley and Cordelia are trying to console him, tell him it's not his fault. But Angel, of course, is the king of putting everything on his shoulders. Says, I didn't cause it, but I can't fix it. I can't do anything about it. He goes, I can't even testify to that fact in a court of law. They make a couple of subtle parallels. And again, I don't know how I feel about this. No, I do know how I feel about this. I don't like whenever they do this on Angel and Buffy, where they try to make they talk about race or queer people when they're comparing them to vampires. And they do that with Gunn in this episode, with like Tim coming in and talking about that. And like Angel saying, I can't testify to that fact in a court of law. I think they're trying to make some sort of like racial parallels and talking about people that can't do those things. And I just think that's so sticky when it comes to like evil soulless things. But anyway, I talked about this in Yoko Factor. We all know. Initially, okay, this scene. I'm curious about your thoughts in this scene, Leia. Do you feel like this moment was odd, like it was out of place?
Yeah.
Or do you feel like, okay, what do you think about it?
It felt out of place because there's been a little bit of like a disconnect with – we haven't really gotten anything about Wolfram and Hart until like the last two episodes, like not even – yeah, the last two episodes, like Sanctuary and 5x5. Were they even in Warzone?
They weren't in Warzone.
Yeah. So we've gotten like little bits here and there, but it's never seemed like they are, you know, kind of boxing Angel in the way he makes it sound like. So it did feel a little bit out of place because there just hasn't been anything substantial building up to this moment. However, I just said, and obviously no spoilers or whatever, but just having watched like season two, I like this scene because I can kind of tie it into something that happens in season two. But yeah, in this moment in the show, it does feel a little bit out of place for me. And I was like, girl, calm down, Angel. Like, why are you getting all like bent out of shape over this? Relax. But it also makes sense.
Yeah. No, it makes sense with where they're trying to go. It felt like an extreme reaction based upon – I mean, he was able to – like, he has Gunn over there. Like, that was – like, obviously, Gunn's sister died and stuff. But, like, Angel – he developed a friendship with Gunn that was a generally positive episode and experience. And then before that was the whole thing with Faith, where he was able to actually bring Faith to a point where she needs to see redemption. Like, that's a win. That's huge. So it felt like – a bit of an extreme reaction against someone that we've barely seen, or against a corporation we've barely seen, and after a string of kind of wins. But like you said, they're building to something, and so I can see where they're going, and I'll allow it, you know?
Yeah. It's just like I said, it just doesn't feel like there's been enough buildup to get to this point where he has like a meltdown about it like this.
Yeah.
But
right. Yeah. But they did this because their Angel has to be shown to be wrestling in this episode because it shows that Lindsay had a choice just like others do. Right. And so that was the intention of this. So Angel ends with, nothing ever changes. I've been around long enough to know that much. Nothing ever. And then the door opens and Lindsay pops in and we're like, whoa, this is huge. Are things gonna change? And Lizzie says, I need your help. I want out. Wow. What a twist. Okay. So this moment between Lizzie and Angel. Again, this dancing around spoilers here. So we talked about it a little bit before in the last episode. Do you think Angel is being harsh in this moment? And do you think if he had been more compassionate towards Lizzie that Lizzie would have chosen differently?
I don't think that he's being harsh because I think that this is like the dance that these two guys do together. I just couldn't imagine, I mean, especially after the meltdown he just had over Wolfram and Hart and, you know, his few run-ins with Lizzie prior to this, I think it's understandable of Angel to be snarky and like antagonistic toward Lizzie and to be very like skeptical about his intentions. So no, I really don't think that it would have felt out of place for Angel to be like, oh my God, do you need help? Like, I'll help you. Yes. I believe in you, Lizzie. Like, you can be better. And I think Angel's like old enough and wise enough to like know better that it would have seemed almost naive of him to just kind of take Lizzie in.
I go back and forth. I think that Angel is justified in what he's saying because Lizzie has made his choices. And now he's trying to justify them. And Angel is someone, like, if there was any other character, I would be like, okay, calm down. But Angel is someone who has made his choices and holds himself responsible for the bad ones that he has made. Like, we see him living with the consequences of that. So if anyone is going to judge Lizzie and be harsh with him, it's Angel. And, like, mm-hmm. and like get away with it. It's Angel. Passion Leonard made a really, really interesting observation. He you know, obviously this episode is setting up Season 2, without giving spoilers, Angel talks about missing the clarity in this episode, and it's the same episode that he also doesn't advocate for Lizzie like he could have, like he did with Faith, who's mass murdered people, and he kills Vanessa instead of trying to bring her to justice. And this is all in the same episode where he's not quite himself in some parts and stuff like that. So it's just like, it's interesting because there's like, Passion of the Nerd was hinting at maybe this is a result of Angel just kind of being like despairing, you yeah. know? And I never really saw it that way before, but I could see it in this episode, honestly.
Yeah. And that's a huge theme of, again, season two, which mm-hmm. this episode is like majorly setting up.
Yeah. Right.
There's I'm just like, whoa. So many, like so many connections to season two in this episode and also season yeah. five. Like it's kind of crazy. This is, yeah. Again, very important one. We're going to have to come back to this when we get at, like, we have yes. to remember because I think
we need to make a list.
So much. Yeah, we need to definitely make a list because we definitely need to come back and, like, talk about this episode once we get to those yeah. other yeah. story arcs.
All right. So they continue to talk. Lizzie says she's going to kill some kids and he knows nothing about it. And Angel says, I need more. So Lizzie says, well, there's files at the firm in the vault. But Lizzie does not want to go back in there because he's afraid that he'll get killed. And Angel is like, this is what we call an acceptable risk. He's like, basically, Angel sees right through Lizzie. He's like, I don't think that you're doing this because this is the right thing to do. I think you're doing this simply because you're panicking and realizing that you have allowed yourself to get this far and mm-hmm. you're not sure you want to take that next step. And he says, that's not change. You have to make a decision to change. You do that by yourself. Most people never do. So he's saying you're panicking because of an outside thing. And you're not panicking because of some soul searching that you've done inside, which I was like,
right.
I love that.
It's not because like Lizzie isn't all of a sudden wanting to change because he feels bad for the children.
No.
It's because he's afraid of like what comes next, what's after this, like how far have I come and how far mm-hmm. am I willing to go? It's still all about Lizzie.
Himself. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So then the gang makes a plan. They talk about how there's these shamans that can sense the moment a vampire comes across the threshold. And Angel's like, that's not going to be a problem. We're like, what are you planning, Angel? What is going on?
He got plans, girl.
Yeah,
he always
right.
has plans.
Seriously, that's why he's the boss. So then we jump straight to the plan. It is Gunn. And I'm like, yay, Gunn is back.
I love Gunn so much.
His two scenes in this, he just shines so bright, so great.
He's like, I'm in. Yeah. Danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yes. Well, it was funny too because I was like, okay, at first I was puzzled over why Gunn is in this episode since it's so brief. But this last line where Angel says it'll be extremely dangerous, that's good enough. And Gunn's like, okay. I think that the writers are showing us who Gunn is in anticipation of him joining the team because we know he joins mm-hmm. the team by contrasting him with Lindsay. Lindsay's too scared. That's his defining characteristic right now. He's too scared to do the right thing. He's too scared to stand up to Wolfram and Hart. He values self-preservation and power over doing the right thing. But Gunn literally jumps at doing the right thing, even if it's dangerous. And we saw from the last episode that Gunn is supposed to be kind of like Angel, or at least they share a lot of the same characteristics. So I'm like, oh, they're doing such a fantastic job of introducing these characters and defining their spaces. It's just great.
Gunn is like a male version of a Slayer. Mm-hmm. Like he would get along with like Buffy and Faith if they ever like hung out and went and like slayed demons together.
Yeah.
You know,
I just love him so much. He's just got, I know he's like supposed to be kind of like reckless and impulsive and stuff, but he's just got this like, this carefree personality that just kind of like a devil may care attitude that just makes it really fun.
Yeah. But he's also very like strong in his convictions. Like he knows mm-hmm. what his mission is and he knows what like he needs to be doing, which is similar to, you know, Angel in a lot of ways mm-hmm. too.
It's refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then we kind of have like this heist music. And then all of a sudden we have several shots of everybody going around doing their things. Angel's like welding over there or like trying to break into the safe. I was like, what is happening? Angel was very weird. He's like wearing these huge goggles and got like the smile on his face.
And
I was
a like, suit.
What is happening? It was so weird. So Lindsay goes into the elevators. You can tell he feels like everybody's staring at him. He's kind of sweating. And we pan back and forth between Angel and Lindsay. Lindsay goes down into the basement, runs into Lila. We have this little moment where they talk about like getting files. And Lila's unsure of why he's downstairs because she's like, I thought you like didn't do your own reading. And Lindsay is really, really good at lying, honestly. Mm-hmm. There's some characters that are not, but Lindsay is believable and Lila buys it. Lindsay goes into the security booth and we see everybody kind of like checking their watches. And we're like, okay, what is Angel's plan here? So as soon as Angel drops into the vault, into Wolfram and Hart, we see that Gunn walks in. And this has got to be one of the best scenes of the episode. Like J. August Richards steals the show with this one scene. So he says, well, my God, they told me it was true. I didn't believe him, but damn, here it is. Evil white folks really do have a Mecca.
Honestly, best line of like hands down the show. Hands down.
Right? Like it's so good.
Like, is he wrong though? He's not wrong.
And then I just love that he's like, ow! And they're all just like staring at him. He's like, did you just step on my foot? Was that my foot you just stepped on? Are you assaulting me in this haven of justice? I don't believe it. Somebody get me a lawyer.
Anybody?
A lawyer. My civil rights have been seriously violated.
I love it.
Oh, I get it. You'll cater to the demon, cater to the dead man. But what about the black man? I was like, preach. Preach, Gunn.
He really went in there and he told them.
He did. He was like, mm-hmm. I'm taking you all to church today. Mm-hmm. So he pulls in some of his crew. They come in and they bring in a vampire and they just let it loose in Wolfram and Hart.
What a great plan, though. Like, just excellent plan.
I love that Angel was like, you know, I know someone who likes to trap vampires and would be just twisted enough to want to go drop one right in the middle of Wolfram and Hart. And Gunn was like, heck yes.
I'm in.
Sign me up. Yeah. All right. So the shaman senses the vampire, but of course they don't sense Angel because they have the vampire that Gunn brought in. Then Lindsay's like flicking security cameras off to divert. He takes off. And as everyone's chasing after the vampire, Angel gets into the vault. And then we have this really, really fast fight between this other demon.
He doesn't even fight him. He punches him in the one time. And then he like blows his purple powder in his face. And he just like freezes. And then he just topples him over with one finger.
He just like boop,
and then he's you like, could see like David Boreanaz smiling. He's just like,
David Boreanaz loved doing this episode a little too much, I think. Like, he just is smirking at every scene. Fighting Vanessa Brew at the very end, like, it was almost like David was cracking up between scenes and then was, like, having trouble
keeping it together. It's almost like Christian Kane was sitting there behind the scenes just, like,
yeah,
making sounds at David Boreanaz or something.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, calling him, like, yeah, yeah, do it. Like, you little bitch.
Yeah, like blowing in his ear, just like Lee Mercer did in the earlier scene, like whispering. I love the little thank you, Wesley, as he like enters the room. I was like, aw. Yeah,
Wesley came in clutch, you know,
making keys, making powder, doing great. All right, so we are in the Wolfram and Hart vault. There's glass boxes with strange artifacts, metal cabinets, wooden trunks, ancient spells, and all that stuff. And so meanwhile, Lindsay's trying to get out. He's so close to the doors when he sees Mercer, who kind of like stops him a little bit. And then we find out that they're going to be doing a sweep and they're calling in the mind readers.
Ooh.
This part, I was like, whoa, how's Lindsay going to get out of this one?
Yeah. He won't.
Yeah, he won't. Yeah. Short answer. Spoilers. Meanwhile, Angel goes through and grabs a bunch of discs and dumps them into his briefcase, not sure what he's looking for. But as he starts to exit, something catches his attention and he sees an engraved contraption scroll that would hold – yeah, it would hold a scroll. The script says, Angel crosses to it somehow compelled. He slowly lifts the lid. A metal and jewel-encrusted tube rests inside. He stares at it. For some reason, he can't look away, but time is ticking now, and what the hell, as he picks it up. And we hear this, like, angelic-type music. We're like, okay, what is this? So as he picks it up, the alarms go off. The gate starts going down. Angel, of course, slides underneath Mission Impossible style, or I guess I should say Indiana Jones style.
Jonas.
His hat.
Indiana Jonas. Jonas. Jonas Brothers.
Jonas Brother. Indiana Jonas. We have Joe, Frank, what is it, Nick, and then what's the older brother?
Sorry, who is Frank?
Evan. Frank is the fourth Jonas brother. Did you know they have a younger brother?
What?
Yeah, there's a fourth Jonas brother. Did you not know that?
I had no idea until this very moment. Frank? Why wasn't he in the band? Why did they leave him out?
I don't know.
That's not very nice.
I think he was significantly younger than them because he's 22.
And
I think
he could have helped.
He's like six Sarah's and like hauling around their stuff. Yeah. Shocker, everybody. There's a fourth Jonas brother, Frankie. But yeah, we could have had Indiana Jonas over here.
Wow.
This sounds stupider every time I say it. Fifth anyway.
Jonas brother.
Blow your mind constantly. All right. So Lindsay is going into the conference room with Holland and the rest of the lawyers. I will say I have a love-hate relationship with this episode in that I appreciated the diversity that they had, but I also did not appreciate that they put all of the people of color, with the exception of Gunn, in exotic roles. And so it's like, okay, we have the mind readers. Let's cast two black women to come in. And then you had the three children. One of them was a little white boy, but they were of different ethnicities. And while I do appreciate that, there's an otherness that happens when you do
that. Yeah, I think that's the right word, otherness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a little glaringly obvious in a show that is so whitewashed.
Yep.
But anyway, so the mind readers come in and we are sitting there sweating with Lindsay. Lila's like so bored. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to miss my lunch plans. For a minute, we think that they've got Lindsay. But last minute, Holland comes over and we find that it's Weasley Mercer. Mercer gets shot. Bye-bye. We won't miss you.
This was a very brutal scene, honestly.
I think Holland knew probably in advance that Mercer was doing this. And this is once again part of Holland's plan to try to manipulate and scare Lindsay. Like, he knows that Lindsay's already scared. So he's just kind of pushing him further and further to that edge.
Yeah. And it also once again shows how like absolutely ruthless Wolfram and Hart is. It's like they're willing to kill their own employees who they think are going behind their back or doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. So it's like even the employees are not safe.
Also, I think too that this says a lot about Lila's character. She sits there and sees Lee get shot and then just kind of like walks out the door and is like, all right, going back to my job.
Going to lunch.
Yikes. And yeah. She's also the only one of the three, or I guess there was more than them there, but the only one that we know of that had nothing to hide, that right. was completely corrupt. All right, back in the Angel's office, they all talk about how they haven't heard from Lindsay. Cordelia mentions you're not going to go back for him, thinking that maybe he got captured. Angel says if he made it out, then he'll be here. If he didn't, then there's no reason to go back. We have work to do. And the script says Angel's manner isn't heartless, simply matter of fact. He's in business mode. Cordy and Wesley share a look. No, he's right. So Wesley gets the discs, but then also picks up the tube that holds the scroll in it and is like, Angel, what's this? Angel says, not sure. And Wesley's like, well, why did you take it? Angel's like, I don't know. And there's like this conversation where Wesley seems to understand something pulled you to this. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to start translating this right away because this is clearly very important. So back in Wolfram and Hart, Manners pulls Lindsay aside and lets him know that he knows that Lindsay has been working against him. But first, he kind of brings in the, oh, wow, what a pity, as they're dragging Mercer's body out of the office. You can't get that out of the carpet. Again, all very intentional. He's just baiting him. So Holland talks to him and says, did you actually believe I wouldn't learn everything? Lindsay, this is a delicate moment. I advise you to tell the absolute truth. He continues to manipulate him further. He talks about how he's in a crisis. He says, I'm speaking about the sharp, clear sense of self a man gains once he truly finds his place in the world, which this is in such contrast to Lindsay talking about his dad and saying how his dad was weak. He didn't want to be like his father. His dad signed off and lost everything with a smile on his face. And so then Holland, knowing this, says, this is no mean feat since most men are cowards and move with the crowd. A very few make their own destinies. Again, planting the seeds, trying to make Lindsay stand against him so that Lindsay thinks, oh man, I bested them. I beat them. I beat my own fear. Like, oh, it's so manipulative. So Holland says, all right, take a few days to think things over. I think you'll do what's right. Lindsay's in disbelief that he can just go. Holland's like, go ahead and just go. I believe in you. Look deep inside. You'll find that love.
Ooh.
In Angel's office, they're still doing more research. And I love that Cordelia calls Willow when she can't figure out. It's so cute.
The little crossover. And they're both doing the same thing at the same time.
Yes. Yep, because you have the Yoko factor and everything happening over there with Adam's files. I like the little nod to Alexis and Allison being in a relationship where, like, you know, Willow says hi.
Yeah, it's so cute.
So cute. I live for little moments like this so that we can be reminded that they're all in the same, like, universe. It's great.
It also sets up this, like, idea that, you know, they keep in touch, like, which is – you know, they don't have to show it like every episode or like mention it all the time, but it's good because,
yeah,
like you said, like this is still one big universe that it's like, yeah, of course, like who else would they call if they needed to decrypt a file? Willow.
Right. It also is a fun little full circle moment from computer class in the first few episodes of Buffy. You
press
know? Deliver.
Deliver.
Okay. All right, so they get in. They find out that there are personal files for Vanessa Brewer, that she wasn't born blind. She lost her sight when she was 21, that it was intentional and she did it to herself. I love the metaphors here for seeing, for all that stuff of how foreshadowing that Lindsay's going to intentionally blind himself to all the evil that he's going to have to do. Ugh, it's just so clever. So they discover that she spent 5 years studying with the Nanjin, I think is what they're called. They're cave-dwelling monks that believe enlightenment is seeing with the heart, not the mind. There's that word again, kind of what Holland Manners is saying about love when he's talking about seeing with the heart, not the mind. Then they do research on the children. There are three of them. They're seers that are found in remote locations, and they are brought here for the first time. They have the power to see into the heart of things. Holy triumvirate. As they mature, so will their power. So Wolfram and Hart wants them taken out. So then Lindsay comes in. They're like, we thought you were dead. So they look up the address. Wesley and Cordelia are going to go and try and intercept the mentor. And then Lindsay and Angel are going to go and try and rescue the kids. Then we cut to the apartment with the kids, and their guardian ends up getting killed. And we see that Vanessa is there, and she's going to attack the children. The script keeps saying three blind children, and all I hear is three blind mice.
Oh, my God.
No. It's like, why? Why?
So my question about Vanessa is – so this is like another human that has a soul that's just completely evil. Like, she's basically just like a serial killer, right? Is that what we're supposed to believe? Like, she's just a person that like enjoys killing.
We know surprisingly little about her, but I think what we're supposed to – we're kind of supposed to see her as who Lindsay will become because of the fact that – she's a tool to be used by Wolfram and Hart. She has a lot of power, but she's also, like I talked about, you know, the intentionally blinding herself. That is who Lindsay will become if he chooses to. And yeah, so I think that's her whole purpose for her role in this episode. All right, so Angel and Lindsay rush in. Lindsay goes for the kids, but Vanessa strikes at him. Then we have this really intense fighting sequence where Angel just keeps getting wailed on until he falls to the floor and realizes that she can't see him or sense him when he doesn't move. Okay, so this fight sequence between Vanessa and Angel, I can't decide. I go back and forth between thinking it's really cool and then thinking it's also kind of like ridiculous because you have Vanessa over there having like absolutely nothing to whack at, and like Angel suddenly turns into the scary villain of like the moment.
A statue?
Yeah, well, yeah, a statue also, first.
I just couldn't help but laugh. Honestly, every time he would freeze, I would just laugh so hard. Like, it was just so funny because Angel is a very still character, so it's like, I feel like it's like very on brand for him to just like freeze. I don't know. It was just really funny to watch David Boreanaz, and you could like see him like almost try to smirk at a few times while he was in the frozen state.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. It didn't help that David Boreanaz looked like he was about to bust out laughing every time that we'd like pan back at his face. Like, he was trying to be intense, but he was just sitting there smirking.
Yeah.
It was really cool how like they've been comparing Vanessa and Lindsay in this episode and kind of showing that like Vanessa is who Lindsay could become and is becoming, and to show how terrified Vanessa is and how she has no direction, she can't see, especially with how this episode ends with, you know, Lindsay looking outside the window and Angel, like almost as if he's watching Lindsay. There's this idea that like if Lindsay goes down this path, Angel's going to be watching him. Angel's going to be there hunting him. And I thought that was like really like terrifying, but also kind of cool. All right. So Angel kills Vanessa. The kids are saved. And back in his office, we have this really interesting conversation with Wesley. Wesley comes in and talks about the kids, that they have an important role to play. And then he puts the scroll down on the desk and says, "I believe this is how Wolfram and Hart knew of their coming." Wesley says, "If I'm right, it's the prophecies of Abergian for centuries thought lost. I've translated some of the text." And he says, "It does seem to mention the children you saved today, but that's not all. I believe that it mentions you. There's an entire passage about you. It doesn't call you by name, but it tells of a vampire with a soul, a warrior in the coming battle." And we hear hints of Angel's theme.
I know.
And Wesley says, "This doesn't surprise you." And Angel says, "No." And Wesley says, "But you said you didn't know what it was." And Angel says, "I didn't, but somehow I did." Wesley says, "There is a design, Angel, hidden in the chaos as it may be, but it's there and you have your place in it." And when that ends, there's three notes that play. And those three notes are three of the four opening notes that are in – that are shared by the Buffy and Angel theme songs. Isn't that cool?
Oh, God, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. Which, again, we know that Angel was set on his path. I think Angel's not surprised by this because amends happened. He knows that there was a purpose and a plan because he had a moment where he was saved by some power. Something saved him. Something stopped. And he's known that he has a place in this world. And so I think by putting those three notes in there, they're trying to point back to that. And they're also showing that, like, Buffy set him on this path, and they're trying to remind us of that moment in Amends. So it's just, ugh, so good.
That's amazing. Wow, wow, wow. Can't wait to find out more about what that scroll says.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I wish I could say spoilers. Okay.
I know. Oh, my God. This is literally such an important moment in, like, the whole series. Like, why can't we talk about it?
And we're just like, well, wish
actually,
I could
no, no spoilers. What? This is nothing. Like, don't worry about it. The scroll, like, we're never going to see it again. It's fine. Just forget about it, okay? Abergian who?
All right, so, and then in Holland's office, Lindsay walks in, and there's a bunch of people clearing out Holland's office, all those pictures, personal effects, and Holland's in there helping pack it all away. He says, hello, Lindsay, and Lindsay is really upfront. He says, I'm sorry, but I did what I had to. Holland says, you saved the children, very noble. And Lindsay says, I brought the discs back, but I made copies just enough to keep me safe. And Holland says, what does safe mean to you? Lindsay says, it means not being at war with Wolfram and Hart, having my own life. And then it says, Holland, like a disappointed father. Lindsay, haven't you learned anything? No one has their own life. We're all part of something larger. Lindsay says, like Wolfram and Hart. And then this part was cut out of script. Holland says, like Wolfram and Hart, you think we're that evil? And Lindsay says, I think you're right up there. And Holland says, ooh. I handpicked you. I know, right? Especially given what we know happens just a second later when Lindsay makes the choice to stay. I picked you not because you were smart, not because you were poor, but because you had potential to see things as they are. It's not about good or evil. It's about who wields the power, which we will be hearing that a lot on both shows.
I just got chills because of – anyway, yeah.
That's ultimately what the shows are about, is about power. And do we have choice, or is it fated? And like how much can we take our destiny into our own hands? Yeah, absolutely. Then Holland again continues to manipulate him, says, you walked in here, called me by my first name. You never did that before. Basically saying, you're a man now. You're not like your father. And he's building him up and making him feel good and empowering him and saying, hey, you're making completely different choices than your dad did. And I need someone like that. But you still have this choice. You can stay here. And here's this cushy job and this cushy office. And I'm going to give you better benefits and better pay. And I'm going to give you the whole world. Or you can leave and you have that choice. And he says, I think you're going to take it, but he leaves, you know. And we know, and Holland knows, that Lindsay's going to take it. Pasha the Nerd has this really interesting line. He says, I think it would be tempting to think that Holland lets Lindsay off a little easy, but if you look closely, the important details are there, kind of saying what we said before. When Lindsay is justifying his actions to Angel, he describes his father's lack of will, and Holland speaks to him throughout the episode as a father would. And in the penultimate moment between them, Holland plays off of Lindsay's feelings of his dad's weakness. So Lindsay goes up, shuts the door. We kind of have the music that's like, dun, dun. Like he has, I think you have chosen poorly. Continuing on with my Indiana Jones references over here.
Indiana Jones, eh?
The script says, Lindsay turns back into the room. His face softens with a sense that it's over. He's made his choice. It's a nice feeling. He moves to Holland's desk, his desk now, and sits, slides his hand along the hard, shiny wood. Then he leans back in the leather chair, swivels towards the big glass wall. We move with him so that we see both Lindsay and the city he looks out on, a beautiful expanse of lights of endless possibilities. It feels like it's all his now. It feels like home. And I was like, mwahahaha. It feels like a new supervillain is born.
You know, you could also, I mean, without the direction of the script there and what that is saying, there's also like the other angle that you could look at where Lindsay understands fully what has just happened and he knows that there is no way out, and he's basically like, you know, I have no other choice. This is the only option, and I'm never gonna get out of here alive, so I might as well just like, in order to save, like, his own life, like, he's just going to kind of resign to this, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
It's probably it's more than likely not that, but it's I think it's like an interesting angle to think of. Like, I mean, giving Lindsay a bit more credit probably than he's like I should be, but you know, it's possible that he knows exactly what's happening and that, you know, this is it.
I actually agree. I think that that is possible, especially given how Angel despairs in this episode. It's like there's just no winning. And then they're comparing and contrasting these two characters and how Angel at the very end, he's continues to make the good choices. He continues to say he chooses not to despair. He chooses to continue to fight, even if it means putting his own safety and well-being at risk versus Lindsay. So it's possible that Lindsay does know, you know. The script ends with Angel looking out over that same city. He too has a look of peace, a calm that comes from knowing your destiny. He too has made a choice. With a deep sense of purpose, he takes it all in, the city, each light a life, and he their protector.
Aww.
When they showed Lindsay's scene, you can hear the theme song, Angel's theme song playing, but it's so much more dissonant. It's minor, is almost played in like a different mode, but then it switches to more of a major feel and the more of the Angel theme song that we know as soon as we see Angel himself. And I love that they're showing the dichotomy of the two men, and they're very clearly paralleling how, you know, Lindsay's over here feeling at peace, feeling like he's made his decision, but so is Angel. Mm-hmm. And Angel is assured that he has made the right decision. Lindsay's just happy he has made a decision. And so yeah. I think it'll be really interesting to see if both Lindsay and Angel are happy with their decisions moving forward. Anyway, oh man, what a good episode. That episode, like, I was watching it and I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of okay. And then like I started like seeing all of the other stuff and then thinking about it in the context of the rest of the series. And I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah, it's a juicy one. Yeah, we'll definitely have to keep this episode in mind once we get to the, you know, like later on when it all kind of comes full circle and all of mm-hmm. the stuff happens, because I've just never seen this episode in this light before. So it's just really interesting. And I want to talk about it more once we get there.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me really excited for the end of the series when we can kind of pull back to all of this. And that also makes the end of the series even better too, because I think sometimes there's a lot of people that talk about how rushed it is, and which it is kind of, but it's nice to see a little bit of intentionality and a kind of a full circle moment there too. So, mm-hmm.
And even if like it wasn't really intentional, I think once it's like out there and it's in the world and it's been created, like we can come up with our own like intentions, because I think, to be fair, a lot of these shows, yes, it's all very intentional, but I think a lot of it is also, you know, putting stuff together because they just need to put stuff together. Mm-hmm. But it's also very interesting when you're able to like draw those parallels, even if they weren't intentionally like put there to be drawn, right? So
yeah, either way, it works. And that is a fun episode to watch just in retrospect, even just standing on its own too. It's a really, mm-hmm. really good episode. All right, next time is the finale to Shanshu in LA. And I'm so excited. So excited to talk about it. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We want to know your guys' thoughts. Definitely DM us or email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.